Enemy Radio. All right, folks, here we go again. Show 2, Enemy Radio. Tonight we're on the front lines. I'm actually in the pub. I'm in Thomas House at the moment. I had the day off. I wasn't supposed to be in work until tomorrow, which is Tuesday. And I got a call just as I dropped my girlfriend to the airport. She's off to Poland for a week. She's gone home for a week. I got a phone call around 5:30 saying that there was an electricity problem. None of the power would come on in the pub. So dropped her to the airport, made sure she got on board, jumped in the car, came flying down here, and I was supposed to be in rehearsals at about 6:30, 7 o'clock. That kind of went out the window as well, because as I was driving to the pub, I got a phone call back off Kevin saying that there was a flood. So I wasn't expecting anything to be too pretty as I got on here. Came in, all the electricity was off, all the trip switches were gone, grabbed some torches, went downstairs, there's maybe 3 or 4 inches of water. The whole basement was flooded. Thank fuck it wasn't sewage water, it was clean water. So onwards we went, we checked every pipe in the place. Turns out that the water pump that's downstairs in the basement, unfortunately it seems to handle all the water and sewage for the entire building. So that includes the 8 apartments upstairs. So that had switched itself off sometime during the night. I had to be in after about 3 or 4 because Kev was working last night and it was busy, so he was here late cleaning up. And he was downstairs at about 3 a.m. and everything was fine downstairs. It was grand. So it had to happen between maybe 3 a.m. and about 2 o'clock today, because I was in here at 2 o'clock today, grabbing some microphones. And basically, downstairs is destroyed. We had a new wooden floor put in a couple of months ago. It's about €1,500 worth of floor. That's gone. That's destroyed. The whole place, like I said, a couple of inches of water. Called the plumber. Plumber came out. He checked everything. Basically, what it looks like at the moment is upstairs, somebody in one of the apartments upstairs has left a tap on. As something as simple as that has left a tap on. And it looks like the pump that, like I said, is in the basement, that's kind of acting the bollocks. So that couldn't handle the constant, steady stream of water, and it tripped itself out. So all night, the person who left that tap running, his tap water from his apartment upstairs slowly filled up every pipe in the basement until it just basically got out. It just came out of the manholes, it came out of all the holes that are in the basement, in the storeroom, everything like that. Thankfully, everything is kind of lifted up high. There's nothing got destroyed, except for the floor. That's the biggest kick in the bollocks. The floor is I would assume, completely dead. It's fucked. It's lifting up all around the edges where it's put down. That was a serious fucking nightmare. That floor is essentially brand new. That's gone. And we use that a lot because we have some Northern Soul clubs that happen downstairs, and obviously those guys like to dance, and before it was just a concrete floor, it wasn't great for dancing, so we put this floor in for them so they could dance away. They loved it. So I'm hoping now that as we get the place dry, and we're going to bring a dehumidifier in tomorrow to dry the place out. I have to note that it is now 1:26 a.m. I've been here since whatever, kind of 6-ish. I have to stay here all night. I'm pulling an all-nighter. I can't sleep. I have to stay up. I have to keep running up and down the stairs, checking on the water, make sure that the pumps are working. Because we got a second plumber in. The first plumber, he figured out where the water was coming from. But apparently there's 2 kinds of plumbers. I'm sure there's multiple kinds of plumbers. But there's an electrician plumber or something like that. And they deal with the pumps and all stuff like that. So we had to get him out. And he came in. He got down into the sewer. And into the pumps, and he kind of pulled everything apart, and he's kind of got it MacGyvered at the moment, so that the water will, as it builds up, it will get to a certain point, and then it'll kick it all back out. But I have to stay here just in case what he done doesn't work, because we spent hours today cleaning the place and mopping the place out and trying to get it dry, and fucked if I'm doing that again tomorrow. I'd rather stay up all night. So I think at about 11 o'clock tomorrow, 11 a.m, I think Kev's going to come in and relieve me. He's going to look after the place while the plumbers are coming in tomorrow to replace all those pumps. So I need to stay up all night, so I'm trying to invent things to do. So I said I'd do a new show while I was here. That's been my day. I ran home, I had a quick shower, I got changed, I grabbed all my recording equipment that came in here. I said, I might as well record a show or two while I'm here. I've got nothing else to do until about 8 a.m, which hopefully is when those the electrician plumber guy has got to come in with the replacement pumps and do all this. Obviously, I think we're probably going to charge the landlord. We're going to pay for it and hopefully get the money back. That seems to be the idea. It's his equipment. It's not ours. So yeah, like I said, it's now 1:27. I'm sitting here smoking, drinking soda water. The car is parked outside, so I need to move the car at 7 a.m. because that's when the clampers, I think it's 7 a.m. I better check that. 7 a.m. that's when the clampers come around, and I've been clamped here a couple of times, and it's not pleasant giving somebody €80 to get your fucking car back. But yeah, so I think we're going to play some songs, play some music, and talk some more shy. I had an interesting conversation with a taxi driver the other day that I want to recount, and I'd like to get people's opinions on it as well. It's weird. I think tonight's show is going to be mostly based around the pub, which is what somebody asked me to talk about, how difficult it is to get a pub and run a pub in Dublin City. I can give you my tiny amount of experience. I've only been doing this 2 years. I'm sure other people have different opinions and different experiences, but I can give you from my point of view, and I'm sure what would be kind of Kev's point of view as well. I'll let you know, but we'll play a song first. Gonna play the Decemberists, and We Both Go Down Together. It's a band I heard years ago in the States, and I never really paid much attention to them. I was too busy listening to kind of heavy stuff, but they were always there in the back of my head, that every time I heard a new Decemberist song, it stuck with me forever. And I could hear it 4, 5, 6 years later and remember almost all the lyrics and how the melodies went. They were that good. I don't know if you've ever heard the Decemberists before. I'm sure a lot of you will. Maybe a lot of you won't. But here's We Both Go Down Together.
Touched Miranda, and while the seagulls are crying, we fall, but our souls.
So there we go. we both go down to get our way to December. So like I said, it's a different kind of kettle of fish than what I'd usually listen to. But for some reason, all that stuff, I really, really like it. So, like I said, I had a conversation with a taxi driver the other day, and it was a weird one. I was getting a taxi home from the pub here, from work, and we drove through the city centre, we drove through Dame Street. And I think I talked about this last time, I'm not sure, about kind of just how violent the city centre is. Late night, after the pubs kick out, it's violent all the time, realistically, but... turns out this guy was an ex-door man in I don't know where the fuck he was, some fucking piece of shit pub over by O'Connell Street. And he was talking to me about kind of his experiences on the door, and I was talking to him about what it's like kind of running a pub. And I explained to him that I personally, I'm not a big fan of kind of forcing alcohol into people. I like to see people having a kind of social drink and a conversation, kind of like a hub of activity. I think that's what a pub should be, not like a fucking drinking arena. But I talked to him about what I consider to be, in some ways, a drink problem in this country. And his thing was that he thought that the drink laws were kind of archaic, you know. And to a degree, I have to agree with him, because he made the point that, you know, you've got a late bar, you finish serving at 2:30. And he said, most of the bigger places that hold a lot of people in the city centre, they do have a late bar. So it means that kind of 2:30, between 2:30 and 3:30, every pub in the city kind of kicks out at the same time, which means you've got thousands upon thousands of people who are all drunk. Some of them are aggressive, some of them aren't. And you've got them all kind of banging heads trying to get into fucking Abracababra and McDonald's and whoever else. I think Subway is the new thing. Subway have late night opening. But and that leads to kind of fights on the streets and general tomfuckery. And his thing was, he was talking about the 12-hour system I think they have in the UK, and in Australia I think they might have a 12 or 24-hour system where the pubs have a license to open 12 hours, or they have a license to open 24 hours, and they can pick their own hours. So if they wanted to open at 3 a.m. and go until 3 p.m, that's what they can do. And he means that because of that, you've got different pubs that are open at different times, and it kind of staggers the amount of people who are on the streets. Now, I have to partially agree with him, but for the most part, I have to disagree. I think the drinking thing in Ireland is a cultural thing. I think it doesn't matter how cheap the beer is, or how expensive the beer is, or what the hours are. I think you're going to get people who go out with the sure intention of getting absolutely fucking destroyed drunk every Friday and Saturday. I think that's the culture that we've kind of bred here. It's since you're a kid, you're told stories about, or you're Irish, you have to be able to drink, you have to be able to do this. So you get people literally going past their own limits, and I don't think a lot of people know their own limits. They just keep going, they just keep throwing gargle into them until they can't get up anymore. I think it's not classified as a good night, and unless you can't remember it, you know, you don't know how you got home, any of that shit. You know, your clothes are ripped, there's blood on you, you're missing a shoe, you know, you're like, Jesus Christ, last night must have been deadly. To me, that sounds like fucking hell. I don't understand it personally, but I think it's a social thing. I think Irish people have it in them. When you get them together, they just get smashed, just get fucking smashed drunk, just to get the cheapest shit they can throw into their body, just to get to that point. And you don't, I'm not going to say you don't see that anywhere else in the world, you see that in loads of places, but there's plenty of countries that have like really good licensing laws, and plenty of countries that have really bad licensing laws that don't have that problem. It's not a cultural thing. It's not the society doesn't embrace the drink like that. They go out and they have their couple of beers, they might have a shot or two at the end of the night, or maybe at the beginning of the night, and they go home. They might stuff a kebab in their face, or they might just hop in a cab and they go home. Another big thing I have is that the public transport system in this country, in Dublin in particular, is fucked. It's absolutely fucking shocking that you can't get a train or a bus home after a certain time. That you'll have to wait an hour to get the fucking Nightlink, to get the coffin ship home. It's un-fucking believable. You know, people, I mean, years ago, before the kind of taxi explosion that we have to deal with now, with the seas of fucking yellow lights all over the city, before that, I remember leaving pubs at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, and having to walk home. and walking the entire way with your thumb out. I'm sure loads of people remember this. Just with the thumb out, trying to get taxis. Sometimes you'd leave the pub or the club early to try and get ahead of the curve, to try and get a lift home off a taxi. So, and now you get in a taxi and it costs fucking more because there's just traffic jams 24 hours a day. I mean, you've got from like 7 o'clock in the morning, the traffic starts getting heavy. Then it might ease off at like 8 o'clock in the evening. But by then, the city is full of fucking taxi drivers. And the whole city just comes to a standstill at night. It's like fucking Carmageddon out there. It's literally, it's like on my way here earlier on. I mean, it's a Monday night. Monday. Town shouldn't really be that busy. It fucking is. It's busy out there. I was driving back from the house in North Strand. I was after having a shower. I was coming back here. I knew I was going to have to stay all night. I mean, down outside the merchant, O'Shea's merchant on the quays, I don't know whether somebody's being shot or somebody's being stabbed or there's something going on, but there must be about fucking 5 cop cars, special branch cars, everything. They've got the whole road blocked off. They're interrogating the doorman down there. And then about maybe 500-600 yards before that on the quays, there was a young girl. This is a fucking weird one. A young girl with her face painted completely white, and she had like, it's like orange fucking face paint on her. I don't know whether it was like stars or meant to be some sort of crazy carnival paint on her face, lying in the middle of the road, trying to get hit by cars, trying to kill herself. And there was people trying to drag her by the legs onto the path, and there was old women screaming at her. And I had to slow down and swerve around her. And like, I was going to get out of the car, but there was people running towards her. It was just one of those clusterfucks that any other night, if I didn't have a fucking emergency here in the pub, I would have stopped and just to see if I could help in any way without getting drawn into the fucking drama of some girl who was obviously locked or fucking drugged out of her face trying to do something fucking stupid. But as far as I'm concerned, this entire city just comes to a standstill. I mean, there was taxis fucking everywhere. And this is late. This is like 12:30, 1 a.m. On a Monday. So there's obviously not enough work out there for the cars. So the cars are just literally circling the city. Up at the in the airport today again, just a sea of taxis. And again, it's that catch-22, isn't it? Where years ago you couldn't get a taxi, and now there's fucking too many of them that when you do get a taxi, the traffic on the way home is fucking insane. It costs you 20 quid for what would usually be like a 7 euro fare. So, I mean, I don't know which way the licensing should go. I mean, I don't think there's any point in really complaining about it. It's the way it is. I don't foresee it changing. As a pub here, we don't have a late license. We're too small to have a late license. We would love to have a late license, just to be able to compete with other places, because people are coming out later and later now. They stay home, they drink cans, you know, they get a slab of Lidl's Finest, and they throw that down their necks and then they go out. Which is fair enough. Everybody used to have a couple of cans or a couple of drinks before they went out, but we can't afford a late license. The late license doesn't work on a per head ratio. So the way it works is it's a flat rate. So if the O2 Arena wanted to have a late license, it would cost them the same amount of money as it was cost us. I think it's somewhere in the region of between 450 and 500 euro a night. Maybe 550, I'm not sure. And there's solicitors involved. You need to go to court and apply for it. And then the police can say, no, we don't like that bar. We don't think that bar would do well with a late license. They might attract, you know, such and such a type of person who wouldn't be good for the locality. So you're up against it all the time. It's not like you just fill out a form and post it in. You physically have to go to court. And you have to go to court to fill out a form and be heard for every single night that you want to have a late license. So if you wanted a late license on a Thursday and Friday, and a Saturday and a Sunday, you have to go in, you have to sit in court and apply for each one of those individually. And the solicitor is charging you for each one of those individually. So say if I wanted 4 nights of a late license, I would have to apply for all these and pay up to 550 euro for each one of those nights. And a lot of people are going to think, oh, it's a pub. You know, 550 quid is nothing. 550 quid is a lot of fucking money for a pub like ours. Ours is an independent pub run by two fucking dickheads who are trying to figure out what we're doing. And we're learning everything on the fly. And 550 euro, I mean, that's serious money. I mean, think about it in your normal job. If someone turned around to you and said, listen, you know, you wanna work in this place for your full 8-hour shift or whatever, you have to pay us 550 euro a night, you'd freak the fuck out. I mean, we're literally just trying to make a living out of it. There's nobody buying boats out of this pub, trust me. So we're literally just doing our best. But I mean, let's come back to that. again, I'm looking at my sheet of music here, and almost everything starts with a D. I don't know how that worked out. I'm going to play some Danzig. Danzig, obviously, being the original frontman for the Misfits. When I was a kid, I was a kid, I'm not going to lie to you. I actually got into the Misfits during the Michael Graves era, after Danzig had left. And I'd heard of the Misfits, and I knew who Danzig was, but I didn't know Danzig was in the Misfits. And which is weird, and it's kind of stupid. But I'd heard Misfits before, and I went out and I bought some Misfits records. I think I bought American Psycho, and I think Cuts from the Crypt, which was like a B-side kind of compilation. And there was a different dude singing, and I thought it was fucking Danzig, because I'd heard so many people saying, oh, Danzig, you know, he was in the Misfits, and I assumed he was still in the Misfits, and he had a solo project on the side. But yeah, I got into the Michael Graves stuff, and I actually still have a soft spot for it. Some of it is fantastic. It's a different ball game completely to the Danzig era stuff. I mean, I'm not going to say it's better or worse. A lot of people will say it's worse, but I think some of those songs are seriously fantastic, and maybe I'll play one later if I can. If not, I'll play one at the next show. We're going to play a Danzig song off Danzig 2. I'm going to play Her Black Wings, which I think was the big single after that album. They've done a shitty video where Danzig just stands around in black and white looking like a fucking muscle-bound dwarf with wings or some shit. I don't know. Probably had some half-naked women in it because of Danzig. But yeah, here's Her Black Wings by Danzig.
Blackest of the black, dark of the night, come to me, my bleeding light. Till she comes now, enter oblivion. Hey, she is part of the light in my arms. Hey, she here in 12 with her, oh, clean she has. When she comes down to me, yeah.
There we go, Danzig with Her Black Wings. I gave out my guilty secret about the first Misfit stuff I ever heard was Michael Graves. Like I said, I like both of it. Obviously, the classic Misfits lineup had a lot more better songs, but that incarnation of the band with Michael Graves, I liked a lot of their stuff as well. The newer version with like Des Cadena and stuff like that, I seen him a couple of years ago. It was fucking shocking. Listen to Jerry Only trying to sing those songs. I don't know whether they should just give it up or kind of form a new band out of the ashes. But whatever. I mean, people want to pay to see the Misfits. If you're only getting into the Misfits now and you're young and it's your only chance to ever see something like that live, I mean, I don't really begrudge them that. But jumping off topic from the Misfits, I think the big news today and yesterday is about this Edward Snowden guy, who was an ex-IT guy for the CIA, and he leaked out a lot of security measure details that are in place that the CIA have been basically wiretapping everybody's communications, whether it be phone or email or instant message or text message or whatever. To anybody who has any sort of interest in, I suppose, conspiracy theories will be one way of putting it, and hard-lying kind of reality would be another. That doesn't come as a big surprise to anybody. I've always assumed that everything I've sent via email or text message or phone is someone else is reading it. Always. I mean, it's there to be read and there to be listened to. I think it was the Australian government came out. I don't know how long ago it was. I should have really checked my facts before I said this, but I think the Australian government came out years ago saying that there was a computer system, a program called Echelon, that they were using, that done pretty much the same thing. It scans telephones for keywords. So essentially, if you said something like whatever, Iraq and car bomb or something like that, that the system would automatically kick in, record the phone call, log it, and someone then would properly kind of listen to it and try and gauge the interest levels of that telephone conversation or email and see if it was worth looking into. And they came out, and I think the Australians, they came out, they said it, and they pretty much also said that the UK and America had similar systems in place. I'm kind of guessing everybody knew that the States were doing it. It wouldn't surprise me if the Irish government were doing it either, or something similar. Well, probably not. They probably have fucking John Joe fucking O'Neill and such a Garda station sitting there just pressing random buttons, listening to people's conversations, hoping they'll fall across something. Probably too busy ringing fucking sex lines to actually get any work done, but there's probably some sort of variation of it done. There was a friend of mine who worked for, I won't go into details because I can't, but a friend of mine who worked for a software company, and he was invited over to meet with MI6 in the UK, and they showed him some crazy fucking software that they had that was similar, and it was tied into a map, like a digital map, like Google Maps or something like that. So basically any keyword that was hit would show up on a map where that person was, and this was a couple of years ago. So like, there's stuff like that out there that has been for a long time, and there will continue to get more and more refined. So this Edward Snowden guy is apparently fucking holed up in a hotel room in Hong Kong. He told his bosses, some balls on this dude, he told his bosses that he had to go and get his epilepsy treated. He didn't tell anybody, he didn't tell his girlfriend, anything like that. He just hopped on a plane, went to Hong Kong, and then went public with it. He's also said that he will not come out with any details and any specific details of information that he was privy to. He said he knows where he had access to information as to where lots of CIA sleeper agents and stuff like that, like proper born identity stuff. He's got access to all that gear, and he said he's not defecting, but he will not come out with any of that information. It's for the good of the people that he's letting people know that their conversations are being listened to, and he wants them to make up their own mind as to whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. As with everything in the States, it's going to be split right down the fucking middle, I assume. You're going to get the kind of right-wing lunatics who assume that of course, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not talking to Al-Qaeda. I'm not talking to the Taliban. You can listen to whatever you want. Then you're going to get the left-wing lunatics who think that, I don't know, you should trade your fucking electricity bill for a bag of rice, you know? You're never going to... doesn't matter what it is, whether it be flavors of fucking ice cream or whether the government should listen to your conversations on your telephone or read your emails, it's always going to be split. You're always going to have war and factions over everything. So, I mean, it's the old adage, you know, you can't please fucking everybody all the time. That's never been truer than what's going on now. But this poor bastard, like I said, is holed up in a room in Hong Kong. And I'm fairly sure he's assuming that he's going to have an accident fairly soon. And chances are they're going to send fucking Batman in to get him. Something's going to happen. And whether it hits the mainstream news is a whole different kettle of fish. Whether we'll ever hear anything about this guy. I mean, we've seen it before. This guy could be flavour of the fucking week. Next week, nothing. All gone. Remember Coney? Remember that shit? Coney 2012? What the fuck happened to Coney? You know? Did they get him? Were they trying to get him? Were they just printing t-shirts? Like, what was that about? Every week, there's something new to keep your mind off whatever the fucking reality of the situation is. It's that simple. Trust nothing. And the old X-Files job. Trust nobody. I think you have to try and strike a balance between being aware of what's going on in the world and just dealing with your own shit. At the end of the day, everybody has their own problems they need to deal with. I'm sitting here in a fucking pub. It's 2 a.m. The basement's fucking flooding. You know, I'm waiting on electricians and plumbers to arrive in. I've got my own shit to be worrying about without having to worry about Edward Snowden. You know, I feel bad for the chap. He tried to do something right and he's probably just going to get fucking destroyed by the press because they're going to assume that he's like a spy or a defector or an enemy of the state, you know. Maybe they'll send Will Smith in to get him. Something, you know. But there'll be a movie about it in a couple of years. I mean, if he survives, he can write a book about it and survive. Apparently they were giving him $200,000 a year to maintain IT systems and data mining civilians in the states, which is... That's fucking crazy. It's crazy money. So, I mean, if what he's saying is true, fair play to him, you know. He had his own morals and he had his own standards and he's after sticking up to them. He's after giving up a massive wage. I think he was based in Hawaii. I mean, he was getting $200,000 a year stationed in fucking Hawaii, you know, to sit in front of a computer a couple of hours a day and press the buttons. I mean, life doesn't get much more cushy than that. So if this dude's after, he's probably living in some fucking... Either, I don't know whether it's a nice hotel or a shithole, I don't know. If it was a movie, it'd be a shithole hotel, you know, and the guy is the SWAT dudes that'd swing into the building, smash through, and there'd be fucking MP5 flying everywhere, and he'd have some sort of fucking USB key around his neck, you know, and they'd have to get that back, the usual. But chances are this guy will just disappear off the radar at some stage, and such Edward Snowden found fucking hanged in a Bangkok fucking ladyboy den, you know, they'll have to discredit him some way, the famous character. That'll happen at some stage. So yeah, like I said, it's 2 a.m. trying to stay awake. I'm gonna have to stay awake because I need to keep checking on the pumps downstairs. Great fun. So I've been talking to one of the guys who does a bit of work here in the pub. His name is Andy Keller, and he's an actor on Game of Thrones, and he's a character called Polliver. And I'm a massive Game of Thrones fucking fan. I'm slowly but surely turning into a Game of Thrones nerd because I'm reading the books. Although that's a lie, I'm not reading the books. I'm listening to the audiobooks. I honestly don't have time to read books. I get into bed and I pass out. And I get up in the morning and I just kind of start running around for work. So as I'm driving around, as I'm cooking dinner, as I'm cooking breakfast, as I'm working away in the pub, I have the audiobooks on my iPod and my iPhone. Yeah, I'm an iPhone wanker, I know. I need it for work. But I just listen away. I've been listening for 20 hours and I'm still not up to the end of the first season of the TV show. So there's some serious fucking detail in there. But I'm lucky enough to be able to pick Andy's brains every now and again about Game of Thrones. Because like I said, I'm slowly but surely turning into a nerd about it. And just little facts and little things about it that I love. I love the fact that they're making a TV show about a series of books that isn't finished yet. That kind of worries me. What if that dude dies? You know? What if he dies? What if the author dies? I mean, we're fucked then. Like, apparently he doesn't really know how it's going to end either. He's going to make it up as he goes on. He's gone so deep into it now, and there's so many families warring and so much fucking crazy shit going on. He doesn't seem to know where he's going. And you get new characters brought into it all the time, and old characters are kind of brought to the forefront as some of the main characters get killed off and disappear and stuff like that. But I hope either this week or next week, I'm going to get Andy on onto the show and pick his brains about Game of Thrones. And he told me that the only thing he can't talk about is what's going to happen in the next season, in season 4. Which is fine. I mean, if you've read the books, you know what the fuck's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen. Like I said, I'm not even over what would be considered the first season of the TV show. But I'm just going to find out a little bit about kind of how the show was made. I think a lot of it's made up north. The parts that he's in, anyway. And for some reason, the stuff up north seems like half the people in it seem to be Dublin barmen. I've seen Mo from Dice Bar. He's in it. I've seen I think it's Andy from the Foggy Jew. He's in it. And then obviously Andy from TH here and the Liffey Gales club there in Inchicore, he's in it also. So that Game of Thrones is kind of giving all the barmen of Dublin a little bit of daytime work and keeping them occupied, which is great. But yeah, I'm going to ask him, I've got a couple of questions for him, but if anybody would like to hit him with some questions, please send them on. Hit us up in the comments section here on Radioactive International, or you can email me. My email address is mabrain@gmail.com, mahbrain@gmail.com. Send them on. I'd love to hear what people have on their mind to ask Andy. I'm going to ask him how we got the job. I'm going to ask him what it's like up there, what the hours are like. He told me that the armor is exceedingly heavy. He's a bad guy, like I said, Polliver. He's the one who stole Needle, the sword, and killed that little kid. And apparently his part gets a little bit bigger as the story progresses. He wasn't in series 3 at all. He was in series 2 a couple of times, and he wasn't in 3. I don't know whether he was referenced in 3 or not. I can't remember. But he's back in it in 4. And I think he's in it for another little while then again. But yeah, if you've got questions, send them on to me. I am also talking to a friend of mine, Tommy Lee Edwards, who's a comic book artist. And hopefully I'm going to be able to get him on Skype. He's in North Carolina. I'm talking to him about trying to get him on the show and pick his brains about comic books and some of the people he's worked with and some of the projects he's been on. He finished up a comic book with Jonathan Ross, the TV presenter, called Turf a while ago. And he's done work for everybody. Movie design stuff and character design, equipment design for lots of movies. What else has Tommy done? You name it. Tommy's done an exceedingly good artist, shockingly good, and an absolute gentleman. And link on everyone back to the TH. I've had him in here once or twice for a few points whenever he's been over for conventions. And Tommy's a lovely guy. He's one of my favourite people that I've met in the comic business anyway. And I stay in contact with him as regularly as I can. His wife's also lovely. His whole family are nice. That's nothing to do with anything. I sound like I'm licking his arse now, but yeah, Tommy's a good chap and hopefully I can get him on. So we're going to play another song, and sticking with the D, I'm going to play an old, it's probably crap, but I like it. The idea is crap. It's got the best intro of a song that I've heard in ages. It's actually a Dog Eat Dog song, and it's Who's the King by Dog Eat Dog. So here we go. Here's some old fucking MTV shitty video fucking music.
You can
dog eat dog, who's the king? So, I got asked a question during the week on Twitter about the running of the pub. And I'm trying to get all the kind of pub stuff out of the way in one show, just so I don't always have to go back to it. Obviously, if people ask me questions, I'll answer it. It's really not that fucking interesting. It's the same as any other business. So people asked how I got into it. So a couple of years ago, myself and Kev, we were promoters and we were DJs. And we ran a couple of shows every month, and we DJed in a couple of different places. We ran different nights. We were everywhere from Shebeen to the Grand Social to the American Toile to wherever, to Fibbers, and wherever would have us. We ran kind of different nights, all in the types of music that we liked. And then we ran some gigs. We done some with Mikhail and Demented Promotions, and we done some on our own, and basically that's how we got into the game. We knew a couple of lads and bands, and we started putting some shows on, started putting some gigs on. And we had been DJing and running a couple of gigs in Thomas House for a while, for a couple of years, under the old management there, when Jay Burke had the place, and Chris and Shane used to work here. And we loved the place. If we had a night off and we were going for a few points, we went to Thomas House, just because the people here were always nice, and you know, you could come in here on your own and have a bit of crack. You know, it was always like that. And you know, if you worked well, if you worked hard, you could get a couple of bodies out, and you could play some good music and people and have fun. So, continued on for a couple of years. We replaced the PA downstairs. We brought in our own PA because the one that was down there was years old. It wasn't in great condition, and we moved all the speakers around. We done what we could with the zero funds that we had. You know, we had gear because, like I said, I'd been in a couple of bands, so I had shit tons of gear floating around. And Kev had like a PA that he used for DJing, and we brought all that stuff in, and we set downstairs up as much as we could. We built a stage downstairs, and we built a little kind of DJ booth upstairs, and we like I said, we done as much as we could, and the staff supported us as much as they could as well. But again, the people who worked here, they didn't own the premises, you know. And the guy who owned the premises, I don't know whether he cared or whether it was just a kind of a secondary thought or whatever, but they always kind of struggled. But they made the place what it became, you know. It was one of those places, like I said, where you could come and on your own and have great fun. And one day I got a call. I was dying sick at home. I had the flu. And I was fucking suffering. I was lying on the sofa, and I was sweating, and it was everything that could be wrong with you was fucking wrong with me. And I got a call off Shane, who was the manager, and he said, "You need to get the fuck down here. The bailiffs are here, and they're taking everything." So I was, "What the fuck are you talking about?" He said, "Get the fuck down here, get all your gear out of here." So we just jumped in the van, and I fucking burned down here as fast as I could. And everything was locked up. I was banging at the door. So Shane and Chris, who were here at the time, they opened the door, let me in, and I couldn't get a hold of Kev. I don't know where Kev was. I just couldn't get a hold of him. He could have been in Germany or something. I don't remember. But I fucking pulled everything asunder, everything that belonged to us. I just dragged it out as quick as I could, and I threw it into the van, because kind of every half an hour or so, there was dudes knocking on the door trying to get in. They were basically here to repossess everything. So apparently, somewhere along the line, somebody hadn't been paying the bills. And someone wasn't paying the bills. So the lads were sent in to fucking close up shop, change the locks, and take everything they could. So we got everything we could out. We brought in the lads eventually. Once we got all the stuff out that belonged to people, we let them in. We said, "Listen, you know, fucking, it's not ours. You're here legally and entitled to take your stuff. We just had to get our gear out of here because, you know, the law says you could take whatever the fuck's in here. And some of the stuff that wasn't here, you know, didn't belong to us. And didn't belong to Jay Bork or whoever it was that wasn't paying the bills." So, as it's such a long and fucking meandering story. It's quasi interesting if you're drunk or if I'm drunk. So as I was emptying stuff out, I met a guy who was sitting in a car outside, and he comes up to me and he asked me. He says, "You know, is that a good pub?" And I said, "That's a fucking great pub, man." And he said, "You know, what do you do there?" I said, "Fuck all." I said, "I DJ and I run a few gigs." And he says, "You know, I have a pub elsewhere. Would you be interested in doing some work there?" And I said, "Yeah, of course." I said, "You know, there's my card with my number and my email on it. Give me a shout." So the next day, I got a phone call off this dude. I gave him my number, obviously. I got a phone call off him, and he says to me, you know, I'm gonna be honest with you, I'm after taking over the lease of the Thomas House pub, so I want you to stay on. So had a meeting with him, whatever, it was fucking, he wanted us to basically run everything. So sat down with Kev, talked it over, said, right, well, we'll have a shot at it, you know, we'll see if we can't keep, you know, somewhat of the vibe going on. Some of the staff stayed on, some of the staff moved on, and we done our best, but it just didn't work. That deal just didn't have a fucking clue what this place was about. He done everything he could to fucking run it into the ground, you know, and we left kind of entertainment's end, but we walked out and someone else came in, and I don't know how it went, I didn't hear. To be honest with you, all I heard was that they were running fucking bring your own beer nights and stuff like that, which is never a great sign. I don't know how well it went for them, I don't know. But after about a year of that, I think it was about a year of that, place was closed again. And got a phone call saying that, off the landlord, saying that, you know, I heard that, you know, you were running some nights in there, yourself and Kevin were running some clubs, and it was doing well. And, would you be interested in coming in? So we sat down with him, and we worked out terms, and all of a sudden we had a pub, and it was actually pretty fucking easy, because when you're leasing a pub, you lease everything, you know, you're leasing the building, you're leasing the license, you're leasing the gear. So as long as you're paying your rent on time and adding to the upkeep of the pub, then everything's grand. The problem being stuff like rates and insurance and all that stuff, that's murderous. Like your rent would be the cheapest thing you pay out every month, and rent ain't cheap, but in total you're talking astronomical money every month to keep the doors open. So it's a weekly struggle, but it can be a fun struggle, and it can be a fucking nightmare when things like today happen, when there's a flood, and this has happened before, just because the whole plumbing system in this building is shocking. It's fucking abysmal. In fact, the second plumber we had in today, he was the guy who installed the plumbing system in 2003, and he said today that it wasn't great even when it went in. It was a fucking low cost solution. When it first went in, it wasn't the be all end all. It wasn't really designed to do what it's doing, and so we were kind of, to a degree, left with a fucking lemon. Not that we knew, we thought that everyone was grand. Then later on, we heard a story about years and years and years ago, and there was a giant flood here downstairs, and there was like 6 foot of water, and apparently they had to hire a fucking scuba diver to go in and fix whatever the problem was with the broken pipe or some shit like that. Because years ago, there used to be this weird kind of fucking line along the wall in the basement, and it was around 5-6 foot tall. We didn't know what it was, but it turns out that was like the fucking scum line from the water. The whole place was just underwater for like a year, maybe more. And it was just stagnant water left downstairs. So when we came in, when me and Kev took over, there was a massive cleanup, because the place was left in a fucking terrible state when we came in. Downstairs was just full of kegs. It was just empty kegs everywhere. The place was fucking manky dirty. So there was weeks and weeks and weeks spent cleaning the place. And doing as much as we could. Lots of the work that we'd done, like the stage that we put downstairs, that being torn out, the DJ booth that we put upstairs, that being torn out, and it was just a fucking, some random table there with a laptop plugged into it, you know. It was just dudes pressing play on playlists. And downstairs, I don't think there was even any bands anymore. I think, again, it was just kind of DJs and open mic nights and bring your own fucking cans. So the place was in a bad state when we came in. But we've put a lot of effort and a lot of work and a lot of kind of love into the place. We sanded the ground floor. That was the worst fucking experience of my life. That was never again. If it has to be done again, I'm not fucking doing it. Never again. I mean, I thought sanding the floor, you just rent the sander, you cover up all the electrical stuff, and you just, you know, an hour or two, you run this machine along the ground, and it, you know, takes a couple of millimetres off, and then you varnish it, and good as new. No, it looked like a fucking bomb went off in here, like some sort of dust bomb. It spent longer cleaning up afterwards than it took to sand the floor, and the floor was a fucking nightmare. And I think we went through 2 or 3 sanding machines before we got one that worked. We rented a couple of them, and there was blades exploding, flying all over the place. And it was around that time that we done a Sailor Jerry cocktail competition. And again, me and Kev, we weren't barmen. And we didn't know anything about drinking, bar having a drink, and we entered into this Sailor Jerry cocktail competition. It's called Roll with the Punches. You had to create like a, you know, an alcoholic punch. And I don't know how we done it, but we won it. And we won it. We beat a lot of other bars in Dublin. I don't know how we done it. Our drink wasn't any better than theirs. It was probably worse. I think it's just because we were fucking locked up on the stage and we were throwing bottles at each other and we just tried to have a bit of fun with it. And we won it, and they sent us to London for a couple of days to be, I don't know, Irish representatives for Sailor Jerry over there. And fuck, we ran amok over there as well. We didn't do half the shit they asked us to do. We were supposed to do another cocktail competition. We didn't show up. We went out drinking and record shopping and kind of showed up the next day. It was a hard old night. Jesus Christ. That's a story for another day. I don't think Kev would be too happy with me telling. But yeah, it was a good crack. And it was a hard old few days, but it was a good crack. But we put a lot of work into it, you know. The whole PA, the whole sound system, upstairs and downstairs, is being torn out and replaced. We've put new decks in. The toilets have been basically refitted. There's another big job to be done in the toilets now in the next couple of weeks. I've put a jukebox in, cleaned up the fish tank. There's actually fish in the fish tank now. Put some arcade machines in. Doing craft beer and decent selection of draft beer. I mean, the change, the big kind of corner that we turned wasn't from the original crew, like with Shane and Chris and that type of stuff. In the old days, it was the guy who came in after that who kind of ran it into the ground. So that's what we were up against, you know. So we had to change it from literally a dilapidated fucking building into what it is now. Well, I think we're doing all right. Every month we get a little bit better and we get a little bit more done. We've only been here 2 years now, but we're getting there. Slowly but surely, we've got big plans. Hopefully everyone comes together. We've got big plans to both keep this place going and expand. So that's about the extent of it for now. So like I said, I'm going to try and record something hopefully this week or next week with Andy, and we'll have some sort of Game of Thrones edition. Maybe not the whole thing, but as much, I would like to talk to Andy about some of the other acting jobs that he's done. I've seen him in stuff like Vikings and a couple of other movies, and I'd like to get kind of the actor's insight in working in that industry. Andy's obviously a working man actor, you know. He works behind the bar here, and he takes whatever jobs he can get. So we'll play another D song. They're all D's tonight again, like I said. Let's play a Dropkick Murphys song from when Dropkick Murphys were good and not a horrible fucking towny band. The new fucking Aslan, basically. That's what Dropkick Murphys are. But let's play Fire Starter Karaoke off Do or Die when Mike McColgan was singing for them. It's a lot better than anything they've put out in years. But here we go. And hopefully see you in a couple of days or next week. Good luck.